From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The House of Representatives on Thursday passed a massive budget bill with overwhelming support from Democrats and only 65 Republican votes. The bill suspends the looming debt ceiling for 2 years until just before a new presidential term begins, and it covers not one but 2 years of budgeting. Although it included an increase in social spending, the military budget also got a boost. President Trump, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell agreed to the deal ahead of the vote. But many Democrats were angered over a lack of conditions preventing Trump from using budgeted military spending to build his border wall, among other things. And Republicans were angry about the bill, including spending on anything other than the military. My guest is Lindsay Koshgarian, Research Director at the National Priorities Project, which is a project of the Institute for Policy Studies, and she's been one of our go-to guests on budget issues. Welcome back, Lindsay.
Thanks for having me, Sonali.
So first, why did Nancy Pelosi agree to this? I think that's a question that those 16 Democrats who voted against the bill are asking. She made it clear she wanted a two-year budget bill to the tune of, and it's a couple of trillion dollars. Trump wanted to lift the looming debt ceiling. Why did she agree to this?
Well, this has been a pattern for some years now. Going back to 2011, Congress passed the Budget Control Act, which was a 10-year plan to cut spending. At the time, back in 2011, there were big political concerns about debt and deficits. That was something driven back then by the emergence of the Tea Party. And the way it emerged was through this bipartisan deal to set spending caps for the federal government. And this is something that back then got a lot of coverage under the term sequestration and led to some really unfortunate and poorly targeted spending cuts. And ever since then, every 2 years, Republicans and Democrats have negotiated these deals to raise the spending caps cut under that 2011 law. So Nancy Pelosi is following the precedent set by all of those previous negotiations. And in part, it's because Democrats want to see the spending caps raised for non-military spending. So for all of our very important programs like housing, public housing and rental vouchers and even spending on veterans' health, spending on things like the Environmental Protection Agency. So some really important progressive priorities could face spending cuts if a deal like this weren't made. However, Democrats have given in far too easily on the military spending side, and we're now at a level of military spending that's higher even than what the Department of Defense originally asked for this year.
If you read the Military Times, they worry about the fact that there's a smaller boost for the military than they wanted. So even this boost isn't high enough. Can you tell us exactly how much this bill includes for the military?
Yes, this deal includes $738 billion for the military in 2020. And just to put that in context, it's true that the Trump administration and the Senate originally asked for $750 billion for the military. So Democrats are claiming that they've cut that budget down. But the full context of that is that the military originally asked for $733 billion in 2020. And the subsequent ask for $750 billion was seen as a negotiating tactic, a way to get the full amount that they originally wanted.
And as and usual, so the GOP negotiates much more aggressively than the Democrats, and they win.
They certainly did, and they did win. And not only did they get the $733 billion that they originally wanted, but they got $738, so they even got $5 billion above the original Pentagon request.
And I understand that there are no conditions preventing Trump from using several billion of those dollars to build his border wall, which he brought the government to a standstill over just a few months ago. We've forgotten about that record-breaking government shutdown over funding for his border wall. Did Democrats essentially just give him the ability to build that wall now and allow him to claim a political victory if this bill becomes law?
They essentially allowed that not to be a part of this negotiation. And by doing that, wow, they certainly made it a lot easier for that debate to continue and for that money to potentially be spent. There's a partner bill. This deal has to do with appropriations, which is one part of the process of how the federal government sets its budget. Another important part of that is a separate process called authorization. And right now, the House and the Senate are still going through that process. And the House, in their version of the military authorization bill, has prohibited any spending for a wall at the southern border. But now that that's not a part of this deal, it's going to make it a lot harder for them to continue to push for that as a part of this other negotiation.
So let's talk about the debt ceiling issue, going back to, you know, you explained the history of how that came about. This year, that ceiling, we found out, was going to be met even earlier than expected because tax revenues have fallen so much because of the Republican tax reform bill that essentially cut taxes on major corporations and the wealthy, right? And so essentially, this debt ceiling was being met much earlier. This was a great point of leverage for Democrats, and it sounds like they gave it away, and they gave it away in a way that Republicans could hamper the agenda of a future Democratic president in 2 years. Because someone pointed out, if we have a President Bernie Sanders in 2 years, in 2021, Republicans could say, we're not raising the debt ceiling, because that's when this expires, unless you drop your demand for Medicare for All.
That's right. So the debt ceiling is an arbitrary legal limit that Congress sets on how much essentially the United States is allowed to borrow. And because they keep setting this arbitrary limit for themselves, every time we borrow or are about to borrow more than that, they have to raise the debt limit. This is something that has come up repeatedly over recent years. It is a sort of fundamental problem with our budgeting process. And it's true that through this deal, this is a two-year budget deal. And so that means that it will extend into the next term for whoever is president next. And it is true that Democrats agreed to raise the limit going forward. Now, what happens when they don't raise the limit is that the country faces a potentially going bad on its debt, potentially not being able to pay the federal government's bills. So that is a huge incentive to raise the debt limit and allows for whoever's in power to introduce a lot of pressure, saying that if you don't agree to what we want, we won't raise the debt limit. So this does set up a dynamic where potentially, if there's a Democratic president next time and there is split control of the House or the Senate, that whoever doesn't want the Democratic president to get their priorities, whether that be Medicare for All or whether that be a Green New Deal or whether that be any number of other things, free college that we've heard the progressive candidates talk about, now there is a significant piece of leverage that has been taken away that president could have made it a factor in terms of being able to raise the debt limit. Now the debt limit is no longer on the table for 2021. And so it takes away a real negotiating tool that the Democrats could have used to enact some of the priorities that are sort of lying in wait, hopefully, for a more friendly administration and a more friendly Congress in 2021.
Well, the bill isn't law yet. It does have to pass the Senate, and we'll get to that in just a moment. You know, we want to blame Nancy Pelosi for coming up with this deal. But at the same time, a very large number of Democrats voted with her, including some so-called progressives. Many members of the squad, I understand, didn't vote for it. But there were 219 Democratic yes votes, 16 no votes. and only 65 Republican yes votes. That means that this bill passed because a majority of Democrats supported it. And I want to quote Representative Ro Khanna, who is a progressive in many ways, who explained his vote for this bill. He said, "This deal isn't perfect," he said this on Twitter, "but includes $100 billion more for domestic priorities. I will vote yes, but will fight to reduce defense spending in appropriations committees. Every Democrat should recognize that the Budget Control Act was awful policy and should pledge not to arbitrarily handcuff a future Democratic president." Well, then why did he vote for it?
Yes. It's, well, the reasoning that Democrats say, everyone from, you know, Nancy Pelosi, who is the leader, to Ro Khanna, who is one of the leaders of the Progressive Caucus in the House of Representatives, they all say that they're voting because of the increase for domestic spending. And it's true, there is an increase for domestic spending, but it's matched by a very large increase for Pentagon spending. And in this pattern that we're currently in, we're seeing consistent increases for Pentagon spending, even though we know that many of the programs we're spending on make us less safe. We know that there's hundreds of billions of dollars of waste in the Pentagon budget. We know that we've spent nearly $5 trillion and counting on wars. And somehow, a lot of people in Congress on the left still justify that by saying they're getting these relatively small increases for domestic spending. These are increases that put a few billion dollars here and a few billion dollars there, but none of them are the kind of broad, bold systemic change that we need. And so the fact that they're negotiating away these never-ending increases for the Pentagon is a real problem. Now, there is a reason to hope that this can change. As I mentioned, the Budget Control Act, and this is what Representative Khanna referred to as well, was passed in 2011. It expires in 2021. So there will no longer be this pressure to increase Pentagon spending in order to get more domestic spending.
But we can count on the Democrats bending over backwards, and maybe they'll just vote with Republicans to extend it. I mean, when they hold all the power in the House, you cannot have a budget bill without their stamp of approval. They have the leverage, and they didn't. They just capitulated without a fight. They didn't even drag it out a little bit. It just was a done deal.
Yes, and this is why we progressives need to really put pressure on them, first of all, not to pass anything like the Budget Control Act ever again, because it really puts progressives at an extreme disadvantage. It makes it nearly impossible to enact the kinds of budgets that we would want to see. So we, as activists, need to put pressure on Democrats not to pass another law like that. And we need to put pressure on Democrats that once this particular reason for negotiation is lifted, that it can't be such an easy negotiation anymore. This has to be the end of the increasing Pentagon budgets. It's now or never. We have now a Pentagon budget that is higher than it was at the peak of the Vietnam War, and for no other reason than the fact that there are Pentagon contractors who want to see more lucrative contracts, more money in their pockets, and the fact that there are people in our military who would rather build up threats like ones that they would claim from countries like Russia and China, rather than look at more serious threats to our actual survival, like climate change.
Of course. So the Republicans opposed this bill on a few related fronts. One is that they didn't think that the military spending was high enough. Two, they didn't like the fact that there was any increase in spending beyond military spending, as in any of the domestic spending. And three, some among them were upset about the increase in the deficit, that the Tea Party ideal of worrying that a deficit is really bad for government. In fact, Trump himself seems to have cast aside all his concerns about a deficit, right?
Yes, we certainly don't see any serious sign from Trump or this administration that they are concerned with deficits.
Total hypocrisy.
From their request for $750 billion in Pentagon spending, there was a study that came out requested by Congress just months ago that would have us go up to a more than $1 trillion Pentagon budget in the next few years. So yes, it is extreme hypocrisy. And if we didn't know before that really this is just a pretext for cutting spending on social programs and programs that people on the right don't like, we should definitely know it now.
And just to reiterate, I know you mentioned this earlier, but the amount of money that the Pentagon and the military gets overall in this budget is significantly larger than the money for social spending. They're being sort of looked at in a comparable way, or even there's even a claim being made that the social spending is higher than the military spending. But the Pentagon and its programs get almost $1.5 trillion over the next 2 years of the $2.7 trillion budget. So the $2.7 trillion budget, $1.48 trillion is for military spending. And that doesn't include the Veterans Administration, which of course everyone agrees should be funded, but should also be seen as part of military spending. That's just remarkable.
Yes, it is remarkable. And it's a longstanding pattern in our country. And it is one that it is high time to break, and it really is a shame that that this opportunity, when Democrats had control of the House, that they didn't use it to make more of an argument for turning that pattern around. We spend far more on our military than we need to keep us safe. We could easily cut. We have a proposal to cut over $300 billion a year from our military in ways that would make us safer, because we would be less involved in military conflicts around the world and we would start fewer wars, and ways that would then allow us to spend on things that we really do need, things like healthcare for all or addressing climate change. And those are resources that we desperately need. And the fact that we are spending them in such a counterproductive way is a real tragedy.
So the House passed this bill. What's next for this two-year budget bill? What does Ro Khanna mean when he says that he'll deal with the, you know, increase in military spending in appropriations?
Yes, well, this is, I referred earlier to there are these sort of two parallel parts of the process. So appropriations is, that's what this deal actually sets the spending limits for, is appropriations. And so probably what Ro Khanna means is that right now they've only set a top number. We know that it's $738 billion, but we don't know a whole lot beyond that. So for instance, we don't know whether, they haven't agreed yet on whether they're going to fund this alleged so-called low-yield nuclear weapons program that the administration wants, that is supposed to be for more usable nuclear weapons, and that is something that House Democrats have opposed. So there will probably still be some argument going forward about that. But the number itself, $738 billion, is really no longer up for argument. And so
it's just the details of it.
Yes, and they're very important details, so I don't want to downplay that. For instance, having a more usable nuclear weapon is an utterly disastrous idea, and something that it really isn't important for House Democrats to stop spending on that program. But they've already given away the $738 billion. It's really too late to change that number. And what that means is that we really need a progressive wing of the Democratic Party that looks much more like those 16 Democrats who voted no on this bill. People who are willing to say that this is non-negotiable. We cannot be a country that spends this kind of money on the military at the same time that we neglect the needs of people who live in our country.
Given the Republican opposition in the House, is it possible that Republicans in the Senate may not hand McConnell enough votes to pass this through the Senate, or is that not really an issue?
It's unlikely that McConnell would not have enough votes. They're typically quite careful when they announce these deals to make sure that they've solidified their own sides. So it's quite likely that this deal will pass the Senate. It has already passed the House, and that it will then be signed by President Trump, who has already said that he will sign it.
Wow. Lindsay, where can people find out more about the work you do at the National Priorities Project?
You can read more about our work on the federal budget and military spending at nationalpriorities.org.
And we'll link to that from our website. Thank you so much, as always, for joining us.
Thanks, Sonali.
My guest has been Lindsay Koshgarian, Research Director at National Priorities Project, which is a project of the Institute for Policy Studies. We've been discussing the two-year budget bill that the House just passed. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.